We all know that cars mean traffic, errands, and budgets.
But they should also represent freedom and fun. Join us as we work to find everyone a car they'll love. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
I have to tease you just a little bit because I'm hearing about service on the Lancer from you.
Yes.
And we talk about German car service, and I thought that was expensive.
Yes.
But after you got done with the all the stuff that the Lancer needed, and it was fine to begin with, theoretically, the dealer had taken
was
care
broken.
Of it, right?
No, the person that traded it in clearly had been driving it. There's nothing wrong with it. The problem comes in here.
I'm just shocked hearing your amounts,
I will share the dollar amounts. The problem exists here, okay? Everything I did when I researched this car is that the Lancer that I got is the dual clutch, which I'm actually really enjoying.
It's
I'm glad
to hear
that. It's a new thing for my brain. It's why I wanted to buy
one. I'm really glad.
I'm making
Welcome
the effort.
Welcome to Dual Clutchville.
Seriously, I'm making the
I'll
effort
be your docent
to
and
shift
tour guide.
It all the time.
Sure.
I'm making the effort to not let it be an auto. It's also not a great auto, but I'm making the effort to just shift it all the time, up, down. And it's just a new way to just
working,
think.
Doing its thing?
Absolutely. It's working great.
Okay.
It's working even better now because I got the transmission service. I've got 70,000 miles on the car, and everything I read online is about 30,000 to 40,000 miles on this transmission you should get it serviced. I have no idea
but
the last
the service
time
records
it was serviced.
Weren't
no.
there, right?
No, but at 70,000 miles, maybe it's never been serviced. I don't know. It seemed like it ran fine when I got
Yikes.
It, but I just thought I'm going to spend the money.
I think so.
Talk about spending the money. Because
I'm still in shock over here.
Little tiny Mitsubishi, makers of the Purple Mirage. Okay, they make disposable cars at this point. This is what I really want to drive home to you, the listener. At the moment, Mitsubishi's lineup is disposable automobiles. Drive it, it breaks. You put it into a ball, you get a new one. This is what they make, but not in the era of the Evo 10. Where they had this dual clutch and a bunch of other tech that apparently has vanished into the four corners of Mitsubishi. I don't know. It's like vanished like dust.
Right. They
okay?
don't exist.
Everything I read was this transmission needs to be well serviced and it has a like do not deviate. You must get this transmission fluid. So I went to our local guys, okay, Cox
yep.
Auto, here in Park City. They're fantastic.
Yeah, they're great.
They like us. They do all kinds of work for lots of enthusiasts in town. Their stuff is great. So thank you to Kyle and Ashlyn and those guys. Took it there, and I told them, this is this transmission, and it's finicky, and it needs this stuff. Now, these are the same guys who, when I brought them the Lotus, went, we like a challenge. We'll research the heck out of it. We'll take it on, okay?
Here's an easy-to-service Japanese reliable automobile. Here you go. Easy, right?
The transmission takes 2 gallons of fluid. Okay, fine, whatever. It's $200 a gallon for the liquid.
I want to know what's in this liquid.
Is $200 a gallon.
I mean, I haven't researched, and I don't exactly know what's in it, but what on earth?
And the transmission
filter. What on earth filter, is $200 a gallon? What
seriously,
fluid?
I agree with you.
Anywhere.
Yeah,
milk,
I agree with you.
Water, oil, coffee. name liquids.
Yeah, I agree with you. Find a liquid
oil,
that is also worth $200 a gallon.
$200
this,
a gallon.
It's called Diaquin SST fluid. Yes. It better be made of diamonds with that name and that cost.
There's some alcohol and wine that is not $200 a gallon.
Seriously. Yeah, you have to go into like really expensive dusty bottles of wine to beat this.
I guess that's
$400 in liquid
Holy
went into
cow.
My transmission. That was not fun. Also, the TPMS sensors, the car's, 8 years old. Those were all going bad. So there's
sure.
no replace. It was
sure.
an expensive bill. But the one I'm still marveling about is $400 in liquid. But I can now safely say the transmission's been serviced well. I probably won't have to think about it for 3 or 4 years. So, yay.
Didn't you also mention that the filter for said liquid was also $115? So, good
yes.
news. And it's not even reusable.
No, it's not. It's a disposable filter when you do the transmission service. In fact, to the point that Cox called back to the part supplier and went, did you say $15? And they said, no, $115. And they were like, what is this filter? And they got it, and it's a plastic filter with a filter in it, plastic frame with a filter in it.
There's not $5 worth of plastic in the
thing.
Oh,
God, no. Of course not.
Is it? Beryllium, palladium, platinum.
Exactly.
What precious.
Exactly. I hear
hard
you.
To extract out of the far remote corners
but
of Brazil, out
seriously.
Of the earth by strip mining, is this filter made out
agreed.
Of?
Agreed. Agreed.
What is the metal?
Yes.
What is it?
Yes. What blood trafficking occurred to get this filter into the U.S.? I'm serious. This is the kind of thing we're talking about. People died to get this filter
exactly.
here. It's that kind of level of ridiculousness. Gosh. But here's the thing. Everything I'd read before I got this car was that this transmission, which is also in the Evo MR, is do not put anything else in it. Get the factory parts. Get it done right. properly service it with their fluids. Otherwise, things go wrong.
And I'm all for properly servicing the car, but holy cow.
But you've got to be kidding. I agree with you.
There have got to be German cars that are cheap to maintain in comparison.
Yes.
GTIs.
We have a German car maintenance question coming up in the questions in a while. But so maybe I start calling these Lancer lessons, because this was the lesson this week. But I've got brand new Michelin X-Ice 3 winter tires.
I'm going to try those out.
So those are good.
Good.
And the car's running like a champ, as it should. Transmission's awesome, which it better be. And there you go. Yeah.
Well, no ice here in Park City yet, but we are going to talk about a place where there is a lot of ice.
Oh, yes.
When I sat down and prepared the car debate here, Todd started speaking Norwegian. He was saying things that I didn't understand, and it's because of his living experience there. And so we would enter into this car debate from Joe Christian. He's in Norway, and he writes to us, A, cars are expensive in Norway, and B, I need a new one. Mm-hmm. I'm a long-haul truck driver, but he's an enthusiast too. Mm-hmm. And so he writes to us saying, what can we do? He sends us actually a lot of links.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Joe. And this is going to be very interesting because he doesn't want Japanese cars. U.S. cars there are too expensive, mm-hmm. except for pickup trucks. And I do want to put that into a little bit of perspective because I did a tiny bit of research that's going to be shocking as well.
Okay.
And then we have Scott S. in St. Louis, Missouri, who was an eye doctor looking for a new ride. Mm-hmm. And I think I've landed on your car with
good.
Healthy budget of 50 to 60 grand.
Well, I've got a couple good ones for him.
60 grand for me.
Yeah. Of course it is.
I mean, how about 60 grand for everybody?
I end up using the Paul limiter as well, but it happens.
I say free reign. Free reign. Okay, so let's jump into Joe Christian's debate here from Norway. And he's talking about this challenge because he is a Volvo enthusiast. He's mm-hmm. at an 04 S80 D5.
Yes.
He's been looking at a Mercedes in E-Class, Volvo V60s.
E-Class, yeah.
XC70s, that kind of thing.
5 Series BMW. I mean, we're talking about, here's the thing. If you really break down Joe's email, and Joe, Tusen talk for writing in. But if you really break down his email, okay. By the way, Norway is one of those awesome languages with the umlaut. Look up, if you don't know what an umlaut is when I say it, they also have like the circle with the dots above it and the circle with the lines.
Makes
I mean,
words
those
look cool.
exist. They look it looks amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know why there isn't a car named with those fun words. I mean those fun letters in it. Just because it'd be fun.
There's no tires. Hopefully Hakkapeliittas are popular there too, as they are in Finland.
Well, hopefully. But anyway, so yeah, Joe, thanks for writing in. Here's the thing. He is a Volvo enthusiast. He's owned a lot of Volvos and liked them. But the key thing to take away from this email is if it's not a Volvo and it's not German, it's not in the discussion here.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah. So he's one of the other things he said that was very interesting is he made the comment where he said he got in a C-Class and found that he didn't fit very well. His shoulders are rubbing against the B-pillar. Mm-hmm, so he actually sent us a list of a lot of local cars that he could possibly get. One of them is a C-Class. I'm taking it right off the list because if it's not comfortable just in you sitting in it, I don't think it needs to be in consideration here.
A little bit of background here about cars and the reason they're so expensive in Norway, and that mm-hmm. is because, well, first of all, oil and gas production is a major source of the country's revenue.
Absolutely.
Ironically, and this could change, it's fluctuated a little bit, something like 37 to 40% of new car sales are electric cars mm-hmm. because of a few things. There's reduced taxes, as a matter of fact.
Hugely so.
Because cars there are taxed according to the weight of the car and the size of the engine, so therefore mm-hmm. the larger and more powerful that we go, the higher your fees. Mm-hmm. And you have to pay 100%, in some cases, 100% of the cost of the car in additional taxes and other costs.
Yep.
Holy moly.
And those taxes are waived for electric cars, which is one of the reasons Tesla has been incredibly successful in Norway to the point that they have often outsold every other car. It's been, for Tesla, the most successful country as far as per capita. However, the flip side is people are waiting 6 months or more to get their Teslas serviced in Norway.
Mm. All right. So if you buy an electric car, you don't have to pay the registration tax or the value-added tax. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the toll roads that are free to you. You don't pay that. And you can also have free parking, which is pretty cool. And this is all because of the high revenues from oil and gas production, as I mentioned. I just want to put this in perspective. In March 2018, 14,401 new cars were registered in Norway.
Okay.
Sounds pretty healthy,
For sure.
I'm quoting a Ford spokesman. You mentioned trucks, Joe, here, and you've had a few pickup trucks. Kelly Felker from Ford, in the same time frame, earlier in 2018, said that they build one Ford F-150 every 52 seconds.
Wow.
Just let that filter in, and then I decided to not actually do the math and figure out how many F-150s are produced in 1 month.
Just round it up to one a minute.
Yeah. And they were proud that it's not, you know, a minute's too long. No, this is 52 seconds. A Ford F-150 comes shooting out of the pipeline. I think it gets aimed at Texas.
Fired out of the pickup dispenser.
It is.
Into the waiting world.
Mostly at Texas, some at Utah, a lot at California too. Mm-hmm. The market there is very important. As you said, because of the Tesla and electric car ownership and because a lot of companies looking at Norway and going, wow, there's such a market here for, you know, the e-Golf, the Leaf, the Kia Soul Electric, all these electric, you know, alternative vehicles here. That, interestingly, is nowhere on Joe's list of cars he wants to buy.
He doesn't want a pickup. That's true, yes.
Well, not only does he not want a pickup, but he doesn't want an electric car. He never mentioned this.
You're right. You're right.
So it's going to keep the cost fairly high. It's obviously got to be used, and he's looking at something with power. 2013 is going to be the oldest that he wants us to go. Mm-hmm. And he's had a lot of Volvos, this 88 360 GL, 91 850 GLT, wow, 98 V702, V70, a 2004 S80.
There's been Volvos.
Yeah. Lots of Volvos.
Quite a few Volvos, yeah.
He had an 80 Volvo 262 Bertone Coupe.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool.
Yeah, for sure.
And what else? Oh, he's got an 86 Corvette, convertible as a hobby car. Kind of cool.
Yep.
I think he's still got the Bertone Coupe as well. All right, so he's looking for a wagon or sedan, comfortable, decent handling, not older than 2013, as I mentioned, not under 170 horsepower. But he said, don't worry about Volvo because they can be optimized with Polestar bits.
Okay.
Kind of interesting, which does lead me to a comment that I want to make, Joe. And then he doesn't want Japanese cars. He says they feel a little cheap to me.
Yeah.
Where did you go here?
Well, I do have to say, Joe, I am surprised that Tesla's not mentioned.
Yeah, because with everything
we're talking
that we described
about big
here.
Sedans, possibly wagons, because of the discounts in Norway. Now, I don't even know if there's a used market for Teslas in Norway. I really don't know if there is. And like I said before, people are waiting the better part of 6 months to get them serviced.
Do you think
so? You might not want one.
Part of the reason that he's not even mentioning that?
Maybe, but I was surprised it's not mentioned at all. I follow the rules. I stayed in large German sedans that can also come in wagon, but I have a kind of a wild card in the midst of that.
Okay.
First off, I think the C-Class is out. You already said you don't fit. Let's not keep it on the list. You sent us multiple links. By the way, I should mention this. You've told us you have 380,000 kroner. That, just so you know, is about $45,000.
Pretty healthy budget.
Okay, decent. And you sent us a link to essentially the Norwegian equivalent of like an Auto Trader, and you sent us lots of links of wagons, and it instantly went, okay, you really are leaning wagon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
very clear from the listing.
Lots of E-Class and BMW 5 Series wagons
but
in there.
But the C-Class is out. You had a C-Class in there. It's out. I don't want you in another Volvo. Nothing against them. You clearly like them. They obviously work. But you've had so much Volvo experience. Let's do something different. Now, brace yourself for different maintenance costs. I mean, it's not a Lancer with a dual clutch. But brace yourself for different maintenance costs because you went German car. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But okay. All right. One of the ones you had on your list that I think is a great one is the 5 Series wagon. I just like those. Those are just cool.
They are cool.
They look cool. They drive well. 5 Series wagon. You had a link to one that was a diesel. You're coming out of a diesel. Nothing wrong with that at all. I have to also say it. The E-Class Mercedes, this is the king of the German wagon.
Hmm.
It just is.
Yeah.
German wagon, E-Class, done. That gets it done. And those come in every flavor you can imagine, from the base one that looks kind of like, oh, there's a German wagon, to the AMG monster that destroys everybody and then still carries your stuff. I mean, where in the sliding scale can you be?
It destroys everyone with 4 passengers and all your stuff in the back.
Yes, exactly. It's like the Autobahn cruiser in Country Killer.
Maybe
it's
a trailer snapping in the wind behind it.
Possibly, yeah. Well, the trailer's airborne because you're going so fast.
Right.
It doesn't even need wheels anymore. Right. Yeah, it's just got little airfoils. It's awesome.
Put an airfoil out there.
It's a floating trailer.
It's the
anyway.
AMG accessory. Now, fantastic idea.
You mount one of those big Corvette ZR1 wings upside down and your trailer flies behind your E-Class. I'm solving problems here. Probably didn't know existed.
No, I like this.
Anyway, so there's that. I do think the E-Class is a great one. I have kind of a wild card for you, though. A wild card because I didn't find them in Norway, and it led me to ask a question. Is what's wrong, and I'm asking you, Joe, what's wrong with buying a car from somewhere else and taking it into Norway? What are the cost repercussions of that reality? Because if they're charging
might be
you,
some,
I'm sure
they haven't investigated all
but
that.
But if they're charging you taxes and doubling up extra fees anyway, what's it matter if you brought the car in?
Like go shopping in Scotland or something?
So
or something
here's
different?
My thinking. I think what you should take a serious look at is the Audi A7. Big sedan with some wagon usability. I think it's better looking than the A6 wagon. They've been out a while now, which you can get deals. So here's my wild card idea for you. Go to Germany, my friend, and buy a used A7 in Germany and rock it down the Autobahn where it was designed to be. Any of these cars you could do it with, but the A7 I didn't find in Norway, which made me think this. And then drive it back to Norway and enjoy.
I like that car. I like that car for you, Joe. I mean, I'm wanting you to have a German car experience.
Completely,
and again,
completely.
Nothing against Volvo, but I'm going to work my way back to it kind of in a roundabout way. And I did break a rule here by a car that I suggested, but it's a car that we cannot get in the U.S. And that's the reason I suggest it. But I know that you said Japanese cars feel cheap.
Yes.
I know this.
You did say this.
And I like the V70s. I like the 5 Series wagons for you. I like all those. I think the 5 Series, honestly, are going to be a bit of a more enthusiastic driving experience.
I would agree with that.
Power aside.
Yeah.
So I look at this 2016 Mazda 6 wagon. Now.
Good looking car. Interesting car.
This is the wagon. It's actually pretty cool looking.
Yeah.
And, all right, it doesn't quite meet the horsepower requirements. It's a Japanese car. It fails in a lot of areas. But I at least want you to have a little bit of car sorbet to just go drive it and go experience this. Maybe you already have. Merely a suggestion, just because I'm impressed with the build quality, and I think this car feels better than the price indicates.
Mazda's
every
doing that really
time.
Well right now. Yep.
You and I get in a Mazda, and we think these cars feel more expensive than they should. How are they doing this? And there's other car manufacturers, which is quite the opposite. Tesla's on that list.
Yeah.
Interiors do not feel what the car costs.
This is true. This
Mazda is the opposite of that, and that's why I encourage you to give another chance. Just open mind, and if you still feel that way, that's perfectly fine. Go back to the German cars. I agree, because you're going to get that solidity, the engineering, all that stuff. But the Mazda is there. It really is. I had a Mazda 6 as a rental car over the summer and just continually impressed by this thing and had some passengers, and they got in and thought, well, this is nicer than I thought.
Yeah.
And when you get reactions like that from you know, friends, people in the car, that's worth a second opinion. That's worth a second look.
I agree.
It might have been a while since you've been in a proper, well-sorted, well-engineered, kind of a luxury Japanese car.
Okay. I see where you're
I'm
going.
Just saying.
I see where you're going. Okay.
I do love the German cars, as I said, but looking at your Volvo love and looking ahead to maybe pulling back and saving money, this, by the way, this this Mazda 6 wagon is 349,000 kroner, so it's 40, 41, somewhere in there.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
So I'm looking at Polestar, and I'm looking at the future models, the 2 and the 3. They haven't really been announced yet, but I'm looking at this as an interim car. You're still enjoying it. I do love the A7 suggestion, but then kind of for the one after that, Polestar reinventing itself as a brand. I'm continually impressed with what they're doing. The Polestar one is, of course, way out of your budget. It's $155,000.
It's a big show-off
limited
car.
Production.
Yeah.
Not so the 2 and the 3. That's at least what the Polestar brand rep told me. Those might be more geared towards the subscription model, but maybe not. And they're definitely going to be an enthusiast tip of the spear. We're experimenting, but we're still making enthusiast driving cars. They've still got this, as you mentioned, Joe, the Polestar, you know, kind of tuning thing going on.
But then
they're more in the future-looking tech. I'm wondering if you start saving with an eye on those cars. And if they prove to not be what you expect, well, you'll have a pretty good budget to get something pretty awesome.
Maybe a
Panamera at that point. But I'm just saying, with that in mind, obviously it's never good, and we rail against this, to shop with unannounced models in mind.
Problematic.
We never do that.
Yes.
But with your love going on with, you know, Polestar, the brand, actually they just announced their Cube headquarters in Sweden in Gothenburg, I'm just going, all right, they're bringing it.
They are.
And with your passion for it, that might be the good time to jump in. You've got some car sorbet. Drive a Mazda, drive an Audi, drive something else for a while, and then your eye on the future when those come out, they might be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I like
that. I know that's a contradictory statement, but it just crossed my mind.
You're thinking he might be the good future buyer for it. I totally get that.
Kind of thinking.
You mentioned the Panamera in passing, and I actually think that'd be a great one for you, Joe, but I don't know if you can pull it off for your budget in the year requirements. I think you're going to be in like a 2011. So if you could find one, and it's viable, and I'm going to go back to what can you get out of Germany, but the reason I landed on the A7 is because A6s are available in Norway. It's the same running gear. It's essentially the same. If you can't find an A7 in Norway, go get one in Germany, and then you have a spaceship car.
Your A7 made me think of the Panamera, but I dismissed it because right now they're too expensive for that budget.
I don't think that the budget converges with the year requirement. I think you can get one for his budget. I don't know that it's going to be possible newer than 2013.
Yeah. Yeah, you might have to go earlier, but, you know, just something to think about. I like
your Mazda thinking because it is the thing that you and I talk about a lot here is it's easy. And I say it because you and I have kind of guarded ourselves against it. It's easy to do this. You drive a series of cars from a manufacturer and that experience is either great or terrible and you decide all cars are that type of are off the table. It's very easy to do.
And it's you're right.
And you have to, I feel like you have to try to keep revisiting to go, how is this part of the market doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you and I have the luxury of doing that a lot. It's much harder when it's your own money and you're driving one car at a time. But I feel like it's very easy when you're only shopping every 3 or 4 or 5, 10 years to be like, I don't want an American car or I don't want a Japanese car or whatever it is. And I think you have to kind of shop around a bit and be like, what are they doing over here now?
Right, right. I mean, it's very easy to be dismissive of American cars are terrible. When was the last time you were in an American car?
Yeah.
Was it your grandfather's nasty something from the 80s?
Was it first-gen Ford Tempo? Because you know what? Terrible.
I mean, we agree, but yeah, it all depends on your perspective there. So if you have been in a latest Japanese car and you're still dismissive of it, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, completely.
I'm just saying maybe a second look is worthwhile in this case. It might not be. I love the German car thing, but
don't have to push you very far to recommend a German car.
The Mazda 6 wagon we can't get, and I think just do it to spite everybody and show that you've got something we can't get.
Yeah,
How cool is that? All right, Joe, thank you so much for writing in. We really appreciate it, and please let me know what you end up with. Maybe you already have gotten something, and like I said, appreciate the support. And if you've got your own car debate, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com or on the website, everydaydriver.com, and drop us a line. Let us know what's your car story and a little bit of background details there with your location, the price, you know, kind of some
price
things.
Is helpful.
Some things about the use of the car is going to be helpful. Yeah. Commute, fun, track, whatever that is. Love hearing your stories. Please write to us.
As we go out to the break, I should say something that Joe ended his email with. I don't know if I can do this right, but I'm going to try it, Joe. Okay, you listed the Norwegian goodbye for friendly regards. And am I getting it right when I say Vennlig Hilsen? How close am I? Am I close at all? So friendly regards to all of you. Thank you, Joe, for writing in, and we'll be right back.
The World Series is just around the corner, and Podcast One Sportsnet is your home for the best coverage around.
Listen to expert analysis and rundowns of each game with The Rich Eisen Show, The Dan Patrick Show, Baseball and Chill, and many, many more.
Listen to these shows on Podcast One Sportsnet or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. When you're there downloading, be sure to rate those shows and rate this one too.
If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with the term MSRP. You might even know what that stands for, but do you know what it actually means? And how about invoice, or list price, or dealer price? It's enough to confuse anybody.
All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even arrive at the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your house.
How do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealer knows this, so they'll set their true price competitively so they can win your business.
So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Hey, we've got to talk about Amsoil. You know why we like Amsoil? Because they're a bunch of car people. They're gearheads. They're into all kinds of power sports and cars, and they get it.
Amsoil has created a guide to increasing horsepower in your vehicle. It's insider tips from some of the best in the business on coaxing more power out of your engine.
You can get your copy for free at amsoil.com/driver.
Plus, you can learn how the Amsoil Signature Series synthetic motor oil delivers 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than is required by the industry standard.
So don't forget, go to amsoil.com/driver to get your free insider's guide to increasing horsepower. Scott S. is in St. Louis, Missouri. He is an eye doctor looking for a new ride. And you might think this is a foregone conclusion if you're, you know, an ophthalmologist, optometrist, a dentist, a doctor.
Silver 911. Thanks for writing it, Scott.
Anyway, moving on to questions. Just kidding, Scott. He is a 39-year-old optometrist in the St. Louis area who drives a lot of flat and winding two-lane highways. He's looking for the smiles, which is, let's be honest, the entire reason the Hellcat engine was invented. It's the smiles.
Well, and it's most of the reason that you and I do this, to try to get people into cars that make them smile.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or you can also laugh at the absurdity of your own car. We welcome that as well. Look at the things that I own. But at the same time, we want you to just enjoy your driving experience. And so we need to shop this way for Scott.
All right. So his budget is 50 to 60 grand. I say you take it all because we've got the budget here.
He says the budget is 50 grand. Okay. 60 grand for Paul.
He wants a car that has a fun feel. He likes to accelerate at stop signs. He likes to get the tail stepping out every now and then. He wants us to throw out a couple ideas, and then he can tell us which is better. That's perfectly fine. He's been looking for a Jaguar F-Type S, but has had trouble finding one that is a convertible, manual, and also a car that he fits in, because he's 6'5" and 275 pounds.
Yep, big guy.
We've got to take that into consideration here, and he lists a few usual suspects about, you know, Mustang GT350.
You'd have
fun. You want to tell me American cars are bad? Let's have you drive the 350R.
It's a special car, for sure.
He's got a 997 911 on the list. C7
that is
Vet.
Prior to current gen. That is the mid-2000s. Yeah. Just in case you don't speak 911 numbers, we get carried away sometimes. That is the 05 to 2012 911, okay?
Right, right. What else? Yeah, the C7 Vet, and he's got a Chevy history on here. Mm-hmm. He's had a 1989 Chevy Beretta. Scott, I forgot about that word.
Uh-huh.
Honestly.
Well,
I haven't heard that for years.
GM got sued by the gun manufacturer when they released that car.
That's right.
They ultimately won, but then you notice they didn't make a Gen 2.
That's right.
I knew a girl in high school that had one, and it was mostly terrible. And I didn't know anything about cars, because my car, as you may have known from listening to the podcast, my cars were mostly terrible, and I was still aware of her car thinking, this is a new car. It's not any good.
You remember the Geo Storm? I thought was so cool.
Yeah.
Dating myself a little bit there.
I knew a guy in Los Angeles that drove a Geo Metro convertible in blue, like that baby blue Geo Metro convertible. Whenever the top was up, it was Los Angeles. It was yellowed to the point he couldn't see through it.
Oh my gosh.
It ran in spite of him and got him like 45 plus miles to the gallon, and he just drove it. And I kept thinking, I mean, you have a decent job at a film studio, really? Convertible Geo Metro? Come on,
that's
man.
That's what you landed on?
Anything else. You could kind of go wherever, and it's going to be – anyway.
If you want a brief history of Geo, they were actually built in the Fremont factory that is now the Tesla factory. As a matter of fact, that factory has built cars since like the late 60s. Mm. A lot of GM cars, but it was the joint venture between General Motors and Toyota Manufacturing, and they called it NUMMI. It was a strange acronym there.
Maybe,
it was the North American. It was the joint manufacturing venture. And so that's where Geos came out of, and no longer. They build Teslas in that car factory now.
Or outside the car factory.
Or in a tent in the parking lot, and they just spray them out there while they're, you
know. It'll be fine.
All right.
Don't look over here. Look over there at the rockets.
That's right.
It's going to be great.
Just shield this with an umbrella. Just mask it off here. Anyway. 1996 Monte Carlo. He said this was pretty good. Define pretty good.
I remember those. They were better looking than they were to drive. They were front wheel drive.
Yeah.
But okay, yeah, go on.
05 Lincoln LS, that was the fun car. Or was a fun car. He had a 2010 Maxima, the four-door sports car. Why did they abandon that moniker?
Because they quit making it a fun four-door sports car. Anyway, yeah.
And a 2011 BMW 335i, which was his best driver, he said, but it wasn't great. Mm-hmm. And then a few F-150s through the years.
As we heard already, there's a dispenser. So everybody in Texas and the South has had one at some point.
52 seconds.
Yep.
It shoots out of the nozzle, the F-150 nozzle.
We're spraying the country with F-150s.
They do.
Look out. Hey, Grandma, duck. F-150 coming in.
F-150's flying in. All right, so he's looking for a few ideas. I've got two here. One is very viable. One is questionable, okay. I think. But they're going to fit the whole launch from a stop sign. By the way, Scott, I do want to mention that right now, whatever car we decide for you, you're going to have to pay to play. So decide, in addition to the car funds, set aside a little nest egg for the speeding tickets that you are going to get.
The just tickets and the tires.
Get ready for that.
Embrace it. You're pay to play.
That's maintenance. It's speeding it's tickets. Maintenance.
Speeding
it's
tickets are now in the maintenance column. I actually like that. I really do like that.
It's tires, as you said. It's just, all in this little kitty cash pile over here.
Yeah.
Maybe you have a second checking account, and that's just the, you feed that.
It's the car fund. Yeah, there you go.
Because it's going to happen. You know you're going to get pulled over. It's happening. It's coming your way, if it hasn't already. All right, so where'd you land on some cars for Scott?
Well, let's see. Again, his four that he listed, GT350, love it. Almost two generations back, full generation back of 911. That's C7 Corvette, which from listening to us, we really, really like. And he wishes he could get that F-Type. Now, I'm going to back your play on the F-Type. Fantastic car. I'm sorry you can't find that spec. I'm not surprised you're having trouble finding that spec because they have the manuals, but they're not that common. And it seems like most of the manuals wound up in coupes. So the fact that you're having trouble finding it in a convertible does not surprise me. I say keep looking. I want to speak to the 911, and then I have two you didn't list.
Oh, okay.
On the 911, you said you'd kind of like a convertible. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say go 997 Targa. That's the play.
Ooh.
We just met Olin out at the shop in Seattle, and he had a gorgeous black one. I am not – look, go ahead and throw stones at me. That's fine. It's the radio. I can't feel them. I don't like the traditional Targas from Porsche. I don't like them. I've never liked them.
You mean from the 80s, back in the day?
The one that everybody thinks of when you think Targa with the roll hoop. It's never been a design I was attracted to. And now they've done the nostalgia version.
Yeah.
We can make it again. Don't do that. The Targa from the 997 generation is awesome. It actually has a liftable back rear hatch glass. It's got the wide turbo hips on it.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic generation of the 911, and you can get the convertible option without it being a convertible.
That's a good point.
So I think 997 Targa if you're going to shop 911. That's my thought there. You didn't mention the Boxster, and my question is why?
Maybe this is a little
convertible that fits most people.
I mean, 6'5", 275.
I know, but that seems to be, Chance is every bit as big as we are, okay? Mm-hmm. Everybody I know that's been a big guy fits in the Boxster. The Miata becomes a clown car, but the Boxster seems to fit a lot of big people. So try on a Boxster.
It's like putting on a pair of pants.
Seriously, one leg at a time, go easy, it's going to be fine.
Wow.
But here's the thing, give a Boxster a try because I think it might be, because you're looking for the fun car.
Yeah.
And I think it is the less precious, just get one and enjoy car of the Porsche lineup.
Sure.
So
sure.
Boxster. But then I landed on something that is kind of a wild card, but I actually love it.
Okay.
You can't find your F-Type. I'll do you one better. Go ahead, take your 60 grand, find yourself a convertible manual Aston Martin Vantage and enjoy your life.
You're going there, huh? Aston. Why not? Doctor, rocking the Aston.
He's shopping for fun.
I can see that.
I get the sense that if this car doesn't work today, it's not the end of the world. You want it to work. I'm not saying buy it because it's going to break down, but I'm just saying the Aston is a car that I know the guys that own them have to maintain them.
You do.
Okay. So some people I know that have owned them, they just run. Other people I know, they're just like, this happened this week. So I will admit that about the Vantage, but it's gorgeous. I submit to you that the F-Type is set out to be the cheaper Aston Martin Vantage.
Yeah.
So just go for the Vantage.
Sounds luscious. They're amazing. I can see
rocking
that. Sound
great, look great. They've been out long enough now. You can get one for your budget. That's the better convertible. Rock that.
All right. I'm liking this. You know, Scott, you mentioned a C7 Vette, which I really liked. And I don't want you just to have a C7. I want you to have a 2017 C7 Z06 I found for 60 grand.
Seriously?
Manual. It's got that removable top as well.
Yeah.
It depends on who spec'd it, what kind of top it comes with.
Wait, you found one for 60 grand?
I did. I found multiple for $60,000.
That's not good news for me. I want that car already more than I should. It's 60 grand. It's out of my reach, but bad enough that I make horrible thoughts and decisions. Yeah.
16,000 miles.
Wow.
7-speed manual. 650 horsepower.
And torque.
You want you know, to really earn those speeding tickets?
Yes.
Buy this car. Honestly, it is a laugh riot.
You could simultaneously leave that stoplight sideways while leaving figure 11s. Figure that out. Just.
Yeah.
There's the my ophthalmologist just left. He just left. There he went. Optometrist. Yep. There he's out the door.
I'm really wondering about this car for you because we noticed that we're pretty comfortable. It's not a huge car, but it's a big car.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big sports car, but it's going to fit you just fine. And the power of this car, I think you're going to wonder where was this power missing in your life. You're going to wonder why you hadn't discovered this kind of power yet.
I think you're going to wonder why somebody allowed you to put license plates on it. I think that's what you're going to wonder.
Every time we got in this car, it's a laugh riot. We cannot believe this car does what it does. You have to deliberately try hard. You have to think the headspace of, I'm going to try to drive the speed limit.
I'm going to try. And then fail.
And then you'll promptly fail.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try every time you leave the stoplight.
Remember the owner of the Z06 we had for the Corvette film?
Yeah.
He dwarfed both you and I, and he fit in his C6 just fine, and he got in the C7 as well.
That's a great point. Sam.
Yes.
Yeah, he was large.
Sam is huge. and to Sam's credit, please don't misunderstand me. Sam is not a fat guy.
No, he's just
Sam
tall
is just
and wide.
Enormous. Yeah. He's like what you picture when you think of what the Vikings must look like. That's our friend Sam, okay? And he climbs out of the C6 like it's no big deal. And he got in the C7 like it was no big deal.
Vikings
and he is one of those rare people that when I stand by him, I think, I'm a small person.
Right. He's in the C6. You're right. He fits just fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking about this car for you, Scott. You've got to at least experience this. And
for
now
sure,
that they're
60 sure.
grand?
The Z06 for that.
Are
that
you
is,
kidding me?
That may be one of the best performance buys out there right now if you're really finding them for 60. That's shocking.
I was amazed that you can have them for that. I went hunting, and I thought, this is a very out there alternative, and it's not a car we recommend ever.
Okay.
Really. It is a 2015 Nissan GTR Premium for 60.
Ooh.
No, I take that back. 65. It was like 64.9, okay. Somewhere in there.
What year?
2015.
Oh, good. Oh, wow.
So it
okay.
has all the upgrades.
Okay.
Everything
right.
new about it. This
not
one
a convertible.
Had,
yeah.
Yeah. It's not a convertible. Not a manual.
Mm-hmm.
It's got lots of power.
You're in wild card territory, but there might be something there.
39,000 miles. It's gray. Obviously, the all-wheel drive. Yeah, 64.9. But holy cow.
That's a lot of car for
you're
that money,
into
too.
A Nissan GTR. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You want to punch it at a stoplight, you're going to have to do work on yourself somehow. You're going to need an eye exam after
that. You're
going
to drag people with you out of the light. Yeah, for
I
sure.
I think it compresses your eyeballs. I think it actually changes shape.
Possibly.
Under acceleration, and your vision blurs in this car.
We're making eye doctor jokes. Look out.
I had to come
eject,
up with something.
Eject, eject. Okay, yes.
All right. Well, hopefully that helps, Scott. We're really interested if, like I said, you haven't already bought something yet. We're curious as to what you get. You've got to, yeah, power. Eyeball-squishing power. Come on. Bring it. All right. We've got to jump to questions because we got a ton of them. And I'm jumping in with Stephen S.'s question about the BMW X7 that has been recently released. He's asking, have they finally jumped the shark? And I think by that you mean size and not everybody is calling it pretty. Let's put it that way. This is their huge brand new SUV that they are desperate to capture market share. By the way, Audi's going to do the same thing. Everybody's thinking huge SUVs. You thought that era of big SUVs was over? No, we're embarking on a brand new era of ugly.
Even more.
Well.
The new era of ugly. I like
say
that. Yeah.
I say that because the grille is rather overemphasized. But this is a big truck. BMW builds a truck pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
But I will be honest, I like the interior and I like the tailgate because it's an actual flip down tailgate with a hatch.
Sure, sure.
It's the Range Rover by this. Well, it kind of is.
Yeah, nobody does it but them, and now somebody else is doing it, which is good. It is cool.
I love
yeah.
that they bring it's a short section, folds down so you can sit there and you can actually tailgate. It's not just hatch opening and closing.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
the hatch, of course, above that. So it's rangy. It's, you know, all those kinds of things. So I'm kind of digging that feature. Do I want one? No. But they're going to sell a lot of them. You know it's they are.
Literally, the front grille is two Trojan men holding shields. It's just massive.
They're going to sell a ton of them. It's going to be the BMW X7 Cannon and spray these huge SUVs at the North American market.
If you didn't get an F-150, you can get an X7 because we're going to make a lot of them.
Can you imagine one of those at high speed on the Autobahn?
No. I'm terrified, actually. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, it's going to be one of those things where if 50 people buy them, BMW will consider it a success. And they'll try to make, let me think, hang on, they'll make an X8, which will be the X7 with a sloped back that starts halfway through the second row. So the third row is now only good for your dog in spite of having a seat. And the second row isn't good for people over 5'6", and it's still the size of a limo. This is what's coming for the X8. I'm just saying.
BMW, are you listening? We're giving you gold here.
You think they jumped the shark at the X7? Wait. There's an X8 that's bound to be in somebody's idea somewhere.
I like the styling cues. It's just the execution of a thing that big to make it look good. It's not the easiest thing.
Good ideas, not done like that.
See Rolls-Royce Cullinan.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you won't unsee it, that's for sure.
All right, what else did you find?
JP Dumphy says, okay, Golf R, Focus RS, Civic Type R.
Mm.
They all have different adaptable suspensions. Do we have a favorite? Who does it best? What do we think? This is an interesting headspace to kind of put myself back in, but I will say this to you, a couple surprising things. You may have seen our RS Civic Type R piece. I'm going to stay there real quick. The Focus RS has two settings, stiff and you've got to be kidding me, okay? The track setting on the Focus RS is good for no one. I mean, it's really, honestly, it's not even good for the ring, and that is a track, okay? It's good for the nice, smooth racetracks of the world. If you go down anywhere that has undulations or a pothole, the track setting is a joke. The standard setting is most cars' sports setting. Now, I'm a guy that likes stiff riding cars, but still, you've got to be kidding me. So that's the RS. If you're a guy like me, the RS is probably fine to daily, but I still would never put it into track mode because it's not necessary.
Sure.
The Civic Type R does handle corners better as you crank it up into the more sporty modes. However, the steering feel gets worse the more performance-based you get.
Strangely.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
So those are the two that I remember off the top of my head. The Golf R, frankly, it feels softer than both of those two in kind of any setting.
I think in a good way, a good sense.
In a usable, let's commute in traffic way, absolutely.
Well, in a good sense, the Civic Type R has the most defined and noticeable settings short of a Magna Ride, short of GM's Magna Ride.
Yeah, I mean, you could commute in that car and it can just be normal, it's dad's impressive. Hoonmobile. And then, just, by the way, I cranked it harder and got nuts.
As you said, the steering feel inexplicably goes...
It gets worse.
Yeah, it's really not good feel.
There's not great steering feel to begin with, but it's best in the softest setting.
Jake Anthony N. asks, what do we think of insurance companies using an app to track our driving habits? I'm not up for that, personally.
They're welcome to try.
This is incompatible with the Daily Triple, these apps. Incompatible. You cannot... I mean, if we're going to be good drivers... They need to trust us, and we need to prove that, too.
Yeah.
So we're not doing our speeding and launch control and all that kind of stuff where it's going to be, you know, doing stupid things, and we're not in a Mustang leaving cars and coffee on Saturday mornings. But the trust factor has to be there, and we have to prove it. As enthusiasts, we have to continually prove ourselves as great drivers and always improving to say no to that app.
Well, yeah, I mean... It's a personal choice thing, obviously, because the reason that they push it is they'll give you an extra discount because they're now tracking, but that can bite you because the fact that they're now tracking proves that, oh, your rate has to go up. And you and I are clearly guys that drive quickly, but you and I are also not guys that drive dangerously. And there is a perception in people that are not car enthusiasts in general that fast is always dangerous. And I must say again, speed is not the dangerous thing. I've seen plenty of people drive very slowly and threaten to take out whole swaths of the car going public. Okay,
agreed. They're causing the problem.
It's about paying attention and driving well. Isn't necessarily about speed, but look, if I put a little app in my OBD2 port, then every time I'm speeding, which is a lot, you will conclude that I am therefore dangerous.
Right. You don't know.
Because you'll just see a stat.
You don't know what the weather, the traffic, the road was like. You don't know your sight lines, any of that kind of stuff.
For sure.
It doesn't relay that information. All right.
Maurice asked about getting your car chipped. I'm assuming you mean chip-tuned. What are our thoughts on that? How do you separate the bad ones from the good ones? Maurice, look, there's a couple ways to tackle this. I haven't done this a lot. I've done it a little bit, but I'm going to say this. In general, I'm going to say go for the known companies, the places that are known to work on that car and have worked on whatever car, okay? Mm-hmm. Like Cobb Tuning is the one that's here locally that everybody knows, okay? They've been around forever, mm-hmm. and they've got tunes for just about everything. They got one for my Lancer, in fact, okay? They've tuned all kinds of stuff. Even if your car, the 86 is a great example, okay? The 86, when it came out, nobody tuned that car before, but a lot of the known tuning names decided to tackle that platform. That's a lot better than that person, the thing you're buying a chip tune from. They've never done anything else, but they've done that car you have. Okay.
They want to borrow your car so they can screw around with the timing.
Now, I will say the only exception there is if you have some local tuning shop that you can get to do your car. They're not a known name, but they're known to do your cars. They have a history, and they're down the block. Maybe take the risk on them, because if something goes wrong, you can go back down the block and knock on the door and go, hi.
Maurice, I guarantee you there is a forum thread good and bad of the car that you have in mind. People have said, oh my gosh, I tried this and it was the best thing ever. No problems. Go for this. Here's the guy to talk to. Call this number. And then there's just an equal amount of stories saying, I tried this. I fought it. It's terrible. I've finally given up. Yeah. There's an equal amount of those stories too. And so you can find those, like I said, on forum thread. There's any car. There's a chiptune thread somewhere buried on that forum.
Yeah, not even buried very far for sure. Yeah.
James M. asked me on Facebook that if I would elaborate on the rear differential options for 2012 to 2014 Boxsters and Caymans.
Settle in, everybody.
PASM or Porsche Active Suspension Management or other electronics try to replace those, and how do they do this? And I'll keep it very short and very simple. It's the PASM, the Active Suspension Management, versus the LSD. Mm-hmm. Think of an LSD as transmitting the maximum amount of engine power to the wheels in any situation and at any steering wheel angle, whereas the suspension management just tries to keep the contact patch on the ground. It can't transmit engine power. Mm. It can only keep the wheels, depending on the attitude of the car.
Yeah.
Whether it's, hard braking, accelerating, whatever that is, that's what it's trying to do. And then working in conjunction with the LSD, trying to transmit all the engine power out of it. So think of it as really the mechanicals first and then electronics.
It's a smart versus a dumb system. Yeah.
And they work together like that.
Okay. Let's see. This isn't a track daily crush. It's a daily driver weekend track car.
Ooh.
Which would you pick
to
be those combinations? It needs to be both daily driver and weekend track car. Would you go with the current M3, the F80? Would you go with the Cadillac ATS-V? Or would you take the Giulia Quadrifoglio?
Ooh.
M3, Quadrifoglio, ATS-V.
Are we crushing any of these?
We're not. It's just which one would you buy theoretically? It's a little bit of a twist. Which one would you buy theoretically to drive every single day and then also use it on the track? And I'm going to go with the Giulia.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going BMW. You might have seen that coming, but I'm going with that M3.
Yeah. I mean, hey, it's the dialed in one. I get it. But I think I loved the Giulia in traffic. I loved it on back roads. Mm-hmm. I loved it on the track. I would drive that car every single day.
They are cool. I have not seen one in a while, and I don't know what the prices are in those these days. I'm wondering if they've come off their $80,000.
The used ones have, yeah. For sure.
Kind of interesting. Very intriguing. All right. What else? Instagram, i36Justin, asking us our thoughts on leasing certified used cars. Mm. He's looking at this option from BMW as an alternative to buying. I say there's really no problems with it if they've got the CPO done and all the check from the dealer, and even if they offer it with a warranty, it'd just be like buying a certified used car. Mm-hmm. I see no problem with leasing or buying. Leasing actually, you're maybe actually even safer in that sense. You might be paying a bit more for it, but if they offer it and everything checks out, I say that car might have come off a lease, as a matter of fact, where people are kind of tiptoeing around their car. People who lease, I think, tend to treat their cars a little bit nicer than the rest.
Well, they certainly get all the service done.
That's get the service done, and they want to turn it back in with, you know, under the mileage limit you know, no damage whatsoever, minimal wear and tear, because you get dinged for that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I say if everything checks out, you shouldn't have a problem.
Let's see. Vesuvius. I don't know. That's what I'm trying.
Vesuvius?
Well, but not really. Anyway, on IG, he asks about, we talk about Porsches. We talk about their long-term reliability. But I've mentioned a lot that what you have to worry about is the 40,000-mile interval service, every 40,000 miles. So 40, 80, 120, and on you go. We've done one of these on the Cayenne. I don't think you've done one yet on your Cayman. I don't think you're high enough yet. But he's how expensive are we talking? Because the thing I've said a lot, because it's been our experience with the Cayenne, has been that random stuff doesn't break, but your service intervals are coming and prepare for them. So he's going, how expensive are we talking? Please don't go to your dealer, because the prices that I mentioned will double. But that service, just so you know, the 40,000-mile service essentially is an involved plugs and all that kind of stuff service. It's all the plugs. It's essentially an elaborate tune-up. Okay? You've also asked a sub-question, which is, could you do it yourself? Yes, you can do it yourself if you know your way around a car. You can do all the plugs and all the there's lots of filters that have to be changed and all that kind of stuff. You can do it yourself. There are kits that are available. Based on the car, it's like between $250 and $500 to buy the everything you need to change kit, and then you can do it yourself. I have heard, depending on the car, everything between $700, $800 for someone to do it for you in an independent shop to $1,400 or so in an independent shop. The big unknown here is, do you need brakes?
Good point.
Because if you need brakes, then that number climbs again.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially if you've got a dual clutch transmission that takes liquid that costs $200
well,
a gallon.
Yes, but staying with Porsche for a minute, the thing is, a Cayenne weighs 5,000 pounds. I live in the mountains. Guess what? At my 40,000-mile intervals, I need brakes.
Yeah.
I just have to accept it's going to be all four corners.
Yep, absolutely. All right, there's a question from Peter R. here, Facebook, asking us, where would we be if electric cars continued to develop from the 1900s and it was instead the combustion engine that went away, or now kind of being reintroduced? Hey, look, we've invented the combustion engine as an alternative to your electric car. And electric car's boring, and everybody has one, right? I would say the art of heel and toeing we would have missed out on. This thing that mankind has figured out, and the technique.
That's interesting.
And the pleasure that comes from doing it right to rev match.
Yeah.
That along with engine sound. I think that's the biggest one, as a matter of fact, because the sound of a car is half of the love for it, at least.
It is for you. It's a big thing. Yeah, yeah.
A large displacement American V8.
Yeah.
Come on. That just rattles you down to your toes.
Yeah,
Aston Martin V12s,
mm-hmm.
Ferrari V12s, all those sounds very much an integral part. I think more so, if you heard any of your favorite cars, or didn't hear them, I should say, would you love them quite as much?
That's
a flat
question.
Six, my car.
Good question, yeah.
I mean, I'm all for electric cars, but it's a big part of the car ownership and why we love cars.
I would say think about how much our cities would be different and how much our homes would be different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the infrastructure for charging and the way electricity moved around would be totally, completely different than it is currently.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you'd be plugging your car in at home every day. There probably would have been a much faster development of wireless charging pads. Everything would have power flowing through it. You'd be charged in all kinds of crazy ways. We probably would have had cities more like the old days when you had electric trolleys that were running off overhead electricity. Imagine that technology being adapted for cars. Would have had totally different cityscapes as a result. It's interesting to ponder it for a second and just see how much it would affect. What would your house look like?
Yeah. You and I have a friend here in town who's the CEO of a really large home builder. And
yes,
I had just kind of started talking to him because he got a Tesla Model S.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to him about subscription and ride sharing and that kind of thing, and thinking, you know, how would home building change
completely
if infrastructure like that and garages weren't part of the architecture for private homes, for single family homes. And it was fun to hear him elaborate on that. He actually gave a speech on that a few years ago. He mentioned
how it's all different.
Yeah.
Well, think about this for a second. Here in Salt Lake, there's an area in Salt Lake that's being reclaimed. It's like, it's called the Avenues. It's all the older homes in Salt Lake. And
all
stuff built before 1940. Okay. Generally it is.
Yeah.
Think about homes built before World War II. Generally the car was not a big thing.
It's a great point. Homes
built after World War II is when the garages, architecturally, the garages came around front to be a part of the front of the home.
Yeah.
Before that, the garage was this shed in the back.
Yeah, for sure. That's very interesting. All right, so this tire question here from Schaefer Brad Lee asking us on Instagram about the Michelin PS4s and the PSS tires. He feels like they're sticky gummy bears on his Evo 9, but he's saying there's a loss of turn-in confidence as he's coming from the Sumitomo HTR Z2s. He said this gave way more turn-in feel. I don't have any experience with Sumitomo tires. Mm-hmm. I have experience with Yokohama, Continental, Bridgestone, Pirelli, those brands. But,
yeah.
But the Sumitomos, I'm wondering if it has to do with compound.
Well, tire wall flex, clearly.
Yeah, that very much so. And the compound itself, and it's just so different enough that mm-hmm. you're feeling maybe it is a bit of a harder compound in a way that you know you're still getting maximum grip, but you're just feeling more flex, maybe. You're feeling
clearly
that on turn-in. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't have the experience with those tires to really say definitively. But yeah, they're tiny. They're low profile, 235s, 245s.
They're wide, but I suspect that the difference is just that you are feeling a difference in tire wall flex, and clearly the PS4s have more. The question you have to figure out is how much does that bug you? Because you're also coming away describing it as if you know the grip is there. It's just the feel is different, mm-hmm. and it's down to how stiff the tire wall is.
You see that we had a few questions on Twitter over here, and there was a question from Ronald H. here asking about the Camaro.
Said, I saw this. This is great.
Every journalist, auto YouTuber, and mm-hmm, us have mm-hmm. complained about the lack of visibility in the Camaro.
Yeah.
What would we do to correct this issue? It has to do with the sketch. They built a sketch.
They did. They built a Hot Wheels car sketch. They really did.
And then they packaged it. Mm-hmm. And that's why package, and by package I mean the side view of the car, and you have what's called an Oscar, and that is the 95th percentile man, so the largest by percentile mm-hmm, person mm-hmm. that needs to actually fit in the car.
He's called Oscar too? That's funny.
It's called an Oscar.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And so you package this and you package the smallest percentage body size, whether it's male or female. So you have these two different body sizes and you package the engine, the drivetrain, mm-hmm, the cargo mm-hmm. space, and you know, whatever the platform is, and you have this, you know, really packaged drawing that you work mm-hmm. off of to be able to fit everything in. And then, you know, designers try to push on that. Of course they do. They're always pushing can we drop this a little bit? Can we raise the belt line and make mm-hmm. it, you know, it affects the design, the overall proportion look of the car. But there are mail slot windows. They're tiny.
It's a bunker. It's a bunker on wheels. It's incredibly fast to drive, but it is a bunker. And you get used to it, but that's absolutely a bunker. I'm going to say this, and it's going to seem radical, but honestly, what they need to do is start again. We've done this era where they came out with the, you know, early 2000s, they come out with this Camaro that looks like a Transformer, and it becomes a Transformer. I mean, it actually becomes a Transformer in the movies. And now they're refining that shape. We need to go to a complete rethink.
It's amazing. The Mustang is so comfortable by comparison.
Yes, yes, yes. And it isn't some monster greenhouse, but they've done a much better job. But that Camaro, by its sheer design, it's got those narrow windows and it's got big high hips, and the rear deck is really high off the ground. I mean, really high.
Yeah.
Stand by one at some point and just see how high the top of the trunk lid is compared to your body. It's way up there, which makes it even worse. You're going to have to start over. But the problem is, if you start over, a bunch of people are going to be like, that's not the new Camaro. Invariably, you're going to have to win people back, which is the reason they are only refining that design that people liked from the early 2000s.
They've got a better direction now, but it's still not good. And
they're still refining that shape. If you're talking about visibility, you have to think like the Acura NSX, the original. Where, look at that thing. The visibility in that car is fantastic. They modeled the cockpit after the F-16 fighter, which is like the bubble of bubble cockpits.
It is, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
But the 911 has got great visibility. The Cayman's got great visibility. A lot of cars, the FRS has surprisingly good visibility.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So
Which is a low bar, but it's interesting. You have to think about it in those terms first. This is a driver's car people need to be able to see, and let that influence the design, which was not the case in the current one.
I love that everybody's talking design. Love it.
We're designing
in our minds. Well, guys, thank you a million for your questions. We really, really appreciate them. There's more to come.
Mm-hmm.
We keep talking about it on All Questions Podcast.
It's great.
All right, guys. Well, we'll end it there for now. Thanks a million. Looking forward to next time. Cheers.